TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of Useful Consciousness. Technology and Globalization. Military and Space Technology, War from Space. Andrew Kimbrell and Carl Grossman. The United States government's insistence on going forward with a space-based weapons program, the so-called Star Wars, has shocked the world. Today's broadcast, and that of next week, explore the hidden agenda and the technological context of that program. The speakers you are about to hear claim that this is not a defensive but a highly aggressive program. All of the speakers are longtime anti-nuclear activists. They are concerned to see the new and expanded role of nuclear power for rocket propulsion and space-based platforms. They also place the space program in the context of globalization. The first voice you will hear is that of Andy Kimbrell, a public interest attorney, activist, and author. His critical work on biotechnology is well known. Fewer people know that he has a long record of litigation to stop biological warfare experiments. He also tried and failed to get an injunction to halt the nuclear-powered space shuttles. He pointed out that a shuttle accident would spread a highly toxic cloud of plutonium over wide areas of the world. Andy Kimbrell began by reading a chilling quote from the famous New York Times article by Thomas Friedman describing the role of the military in globalization. Andy Kimbrell.
He says, "For globalism to work, America can't be afraid to act like the almighty superpower that it is. The hidden hand of the market will never work without a hidden fist. McDonald's cannot flourish without McDonnell Douglas, the designer of the F-15. And that hidden fist that keeps the world safe for Silicon Valley's technologies is called the United States Army, Air Force, Navy, and Marine Corps." So today, we are very fortunate to have a panel here that is going to expose for you the hidden fist, the new role of the military in the age of globalization. I wanted to try and put this into something of a political context. Clearly, for all of us who've worked so hard on these issues, whether in the courts or in the streets for so long, our work is not over. But I have a pet peeve, frankly. There is a defense whenever you talk about this issue in Washington or elsewhere. People say, well, we need our military to protect something around the world. What is that? Democracy. That's right. That's the magic word here. That's the magic myth. Let's spend a few moments as we begin this panel, at least to get rid of this myth before we begin to understand far better what they're really up to. But they're not up to democracy, I can tell you that. You know, we don't need the last election to prove to us that we do not live in a democracy. I do not think I need to tell this audience that we live in what could be generously described as a corporate oligarchy. But let's look at how that corporate oligarchy works a little bit. Let's expose that myth just a little bit. And if we do, I think we're going to see a whole new chilling political task ahead of us. The entire technological infrastructure that we have, energy, transportation, food, education, media, communications, is essentially a totalitarian system. By that I mean we can't take responsibility for these massive technologies, and goodness knows they can't be responsive to us. If this group here were to make a collective phone call right now to New York Utility and say, we do not want nuclear power to light this room because we are activists and we know what it does, the response would appropriately be laughter. You can't believe the call I got today, a bunch of nuts called. They didn't want the lights in this room to be nuclear. What do they think? We can, like, respond to that, right? We cannot take responsibility for these technologies, and they cannot be responsive to us. And if you look at these technologies, from nuclear power to our food production, they require scientific experts, they require massive centralization of resources, massive capital, massive use of natural resources. They are totalitarian systems, no other way to put it. And what about the huge technocracies that are required to run these technologies? The corporations, the government bureaucracies, the military. the vast majority of Americans work for the major corporations, government bureaucracies, and the military. And each one of these is a dictatorship. Every corporation out there, and I've worked for a bunch of them, unfortunately, government bureaucracy and the military are dictatorships. So let's get this straight. We live in a democracy, but we don't control where our taxpayer dollars are spent, what's taught to our kids, where our energy comes from, maybe even the job we're going to have next. Those are controlled by totalitarian technologies. And when we do get a job, we work in a dictatorship all day. But we live in a democracy, because we get to vote for a couple of boobs every 4 years. I don't think so. Or as my daughter would say, get real. So I think we need a whole new political lexicon if we're going to understand what's going on. We need to keep democracy for ourselves, for the people, and we've got to say something else about what they're doing. The corporations and the technocrats now that are in a global ball, a global dance, where they're taking over much of the world's governance. Now, C. Wright Mills, a few years ago, tremendous sociologist that died much too young, he suggested that we rephrase everything as turned to be, we're being managed, we're being manipulated, we're being controlled. He called our current system soft managerialism. Let's just call it soft tyranny. And he called what was going on in the Soviet Union at that time hard managerialism. Now, if we are involved in soft tyranny, what keeps a society like this together? Relative affluence, massive propaganda, right? The illusion, the facade of democracy. A facade that they do everything they can possibly do to keep up, which, as I said, even the most cursory review of our real lives reveals is not there. Soft tyranny. But what happens when there's economic instability? Carl Grossman is going to reveal to you a Space Command report that talks about the new military being necessary when globalization inevitably leads to a greater distance between the haves and the have-nots. What happens when soft tyranny doesn't work anymore, when the affluence, when the amusing ourselves to death stops because we're too uncomfortable and there's too many have-nots? And then we get to hard tyranny. All of us have studied this from the Weimar Republic to Nazi Germany. But here I think you're going to find this panel extremely chilling. Because around the world, whenever there has been a breakdown and they need hard tyranny, hard managerialism, they've been able to bring in a sophisticated infrastructure of surveillance and destruction that no totalitarian state has ever had before. You're going to hear about space weaponry of amazing ability, not only for surveillance, but also for accurate attack. You're going to hear about a blurring of the line between police activity and military activity. And we're already experiencing that in a number of new technologies, 4,000 publicly paid closed-circuit TVs right here in New York City. Recently, they took a photograph of everybody who attended the Super Bowl. I don't know if that explains my New York Giants' terrible performance, but I'd like to think it might. We have seen genetic identification throughout the entire Department of Defense. Everybody in the Department of Defense has to have genetic fingerprints. We are seeing the slow infrastructure of hard tyranny waiting to be there when it has to happen. So let's, as we hear this panel, hopefully begin to understand this new lexicon. We are not exporting democracy around the world. At best, we are exporting the soft tyranny that is the reality of our own country. And when that soft tyranny fails, they are now ready for a hard tyranny like this world has never seen, a hard tyranny that these speakers are going to inform you about. You know, there was a teaching like this in 1964, and at that point, Mario Savio got up, and he said that the only solution here, if you're sick of the machine, and the machine makes you sick at heart, is to put your body in the way of that machine and tell them you're not going to take it anymore and make the machine stop. And what is extraordinary about the speakers that you're going to hear now is that each and every one of them is not only an extraordinary expert in their field, but each in their own way has literally put their bodies in the way of the machine to try and make it stop. The first speaker is an old friend of mine, Many of the litigations that I've done, and maybe we can talk about this, I did several litigations to stop biological warfare experiments, including several in Dugway. We closed down the EMP facilities around Washington, D.C. I tried to get an injunction to halt the nuclear-powered shuttles that went up, and we failed at that, unfortunately. But in both the successful EMP litigations and in the successful, at least media successful, shuttle litigations, Carl Grossman was absolutely key. He is the space guru. You've got the guru here today. More formally, he's professor of journalism at the State University of New York and College at Old Westbury. His books include The Wrong Stuff, The Space Program's Nuclear Threat to Our Planet, his books Weapon in Space, and his really great video documentary, Star Wars Returns. He began his investigative reporting on space issues 15 years ago when he broke the story in The Nation that the next mission of the ill-fated Challenger involved launching a space probe containing 24 pounds of plutonium. That's the one we tried to stop. Imagine that, a nuclear holocaust over this country. He is the narrator and writer of the award-winning video documentary Nukes in Space, The Nuclearization and Weaponization of the Heavens. Please welcome Carl Grossman.
Good afternoon. The United States is seeking to control space and from space dominate the earth below. And the words control and dominate are words repeatedly used in U.S. military documents, like this one, Vision for 2020 from the U.S. Space Command. The cover, a laser in space zapping a target below. Yes, the U.S. military would like to base weapons in space. The new Bush administration is gung-ho for U.S. projection of space military power. As last month's report, here it is, of the Space Commission, chaired by incoming Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, puts it, in the coming period, the U.S. will conduct operations to, from, in, and through space in support of its national interests, both on the Earth and in space. And the media reports we got on this was it's about missile defense. It's about far more than missile defense. In fact, Star Wars is back. But there's a difference since Star Wars first emerged under Ronald Reagan in 1983. Then it was purportedly needed to fend off what Reagan called the evil empire, the Soviet Union. There is no Soviet Union any longer, and a key rationale for Star Wars now, according to the military documents, has to do with the global economy, of which the United States, of course, is the engine. The U.S. from the, this is the term used for the heavens in these government military reports, the ultimate high ground of space, dominate the planet below, in part to keep the global economy on track. Says this U.S. Space Command Vision for 2020 report, the globalization of the world economy will continue with a widening between haves and have-nots. From space, the U.S. would keep those have-nots in line. The U.S. Space Command, which was set up by the Pentagon in 1985, describes itself in Vision 2020 this way. U.S. Space Command dominating the space dimension of military operations to protect U.S. interests and investment, integrating space forces into warfighting capabilities across the full spectrum of conflict. Vision for 2020 compares the U.S. effort to control space and the earth below to how centuries ago nations, this is a quote, nations built navies to protect and enhance their commercial interests, referring to the great empires of Europe that ruled the waves and thus the earth to maintain their imperial economies. The long-range plan also stresses, again, global economy runs through this stuff a lot. The United States will remain a global power and exert global leadership. The United States won't always be able to forward base its forces. Widespread communications will highlight disparities in resources and quality of life, contributing to unrest in developing countries. The global economy will continue to become more interdependent. Economic alliances, as well as the growth and influence of multinational corporations, will blur security agreements. The gap between have and have-not nations will widen, creating regional arrest. One of the long acknowledged and commonly understood advantages of space-based platforms is no restriction or country clearances to overfly a nation from space. The U.S. Space Command seeks to become, and these are the words of Bill Saltzman, he is the director of Citizens for Peace in Space, the U.S. Space Command is seeking to become the enforcement arm of the global economy. U.S. citizens are not aware of the broad military plans of the United States for space because of the PR pitch of the new Star Wars push. It's about protecting against, in fact, this is words used in this new Rumsfeld report, a space Pearl Harbor. It's just about missile defense. And due to a communications media that are lazy and worse, the people of this country have not gotten the facts. But other nations of the world do understand. That's why at the United Nations last November 20th, a resolution was introduced on which 163 nations voted yes for prevention of an arms race in outer space. It reaffirmed the basic international law on space, the Outer Space Treaty of 1967, and specifically its provision that space be set aside for peaceful purposes. The Outer Space Treaty is all about keeping war out of space. The United States abstained. A country leading in the international effort to stop the U.S. plans by strengthening the Outer Space Treaty and barring all weapons in space is Canada, no potential rival. As Mark Vidrick here, representing Canada, said at the UN last year, it has been suggested that our proposal is not relevant because the assessment on which it rests is either premature or alarmist. In our view, it's neither. One need only look at what is happening right now. Vidrick here went on, there is no question that technology can be developed to place weapons in outer space. There is also no question that no state can expect to maintain a monopoly on such knowledge or such capabilities for all time. If one state actively pursues the weaponization of space, we can be sure others will follow. But the rogue state called the United States is blocking the Canadian initiative. For the U.S. thinks it can be, and this is a motto of the Space Command, Master of Space. Indeed, Master of Space appears as a Space Command uniform patch and in jumbo letters over the entrance of the Air Force's 50th Space Wing. It pretty well sums up the attitude towards space of the U.S. power structure. Working closely with the U.S. military and achieving this goal are major aerospace corporations. Indeed, the long-range plan starts out, and it's right here, by explaining how it's been U.S. Space Command's number one priority, investing nearly 20 man-years to make it a reality. The development and production process by design involved hundreds of people, including about 75 corporations. And this plan then goes on to list, you don't need to be an investigative reporter, to list the 75 corporations essentially involved in helping set U.S. military doctrine. Aerojet, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Sparta to TRW and Vista Technologies. Star Wars back, in fact, Star Wars with its powerful backers never went away. Funding at $6 billion a year plus monies in the black or secret for U.S. space military activities continue through the Clinton administration. And this isn't just words, it's not just rhetoric. Last December, Clinton's Department of Defense cleared the way for the development of the space-based laser readiness demonstrator, a project of Lockheed Martin, Boeing, and TRW, with a life cycle budget of $20 to $30 billion. A second space-based laser weapon on which development continued through the Clinton years, the Alpha High Energy laser now test-fired more than 20 times. It was Clinton's Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Air Force for Space, Keith Hall, who said, with regard to space dominance, we have it, we like it, and we're going to keep it. And things are far worse now with Bush and Cheney, their administration intimately linked to the aerospace companies. Cheney himself, a former member of the TRW board, his wife Lynn, a member of the Lockheed Martin board, and tied to the ultra-right think tanks that with the U.S. military have been promoting Star Wars. The new administration is pushing hard and fast to make space a new arena of war. And as this is the blueprint now of the Bush administration for space warfare. This Rumsfeld Space Commission report speaks about U.S. power projection in, from, and through space. It says that the president should have the option to deploy weapons in space. It proposes the U.S. Space Command become the nucleus of a U.S. Space Corps, like the Marine Corps, and that could morph in a few years to become a separate branch of the military, the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Space Corps. For the documentary, Star Wars Returns, just as a latecomer, just 2 weeks ago, we interviewed in Washington the senator whose legislation set up the Space Commission, Senator Bob Smith of New Hampshire. It is our manifest destiny, says Senator Smith, about all this stuff. You know, we went from the East Coast to the West Coast of the United States of America, settling the continent, and they call that manifest destiny. And the next continent, if you will, the next frontier is space, and it goes on forever. Now it's U.S. cosmic manifest destiny. A book I would suggest you look at, The Future of War, Power, Technology, and American World Dominance in the 21st Century by think tankers George and Meredith Friedman. It concludes, just as by the year 1500, it was apparent that the European experience of power would be its domination of the global seas. It doesn't take much to see the American experience of power will rest on the domination of space. Just as Europe expanded war and its power to the global oceans, the United States is expanding war and its power into space. Just as Europe shaped the world for half a millennium, so too the United States will shape the world for at least that length of time. For better or worse, America has seized hold of the future of war, and with it for a time, the future of humanity. While the rest of the world will not sit back and accept U.S. world dominance from space, if the U.S. moves ahead on its program of astro-imperialism, deploys weapons in space, other nations, China and Russia right off, will meet the U.S. in kind. There'll be an arms race and inevitably war in space. Incidentally, the weapons the U.S. military wants to deploy in space, especially lasers, will need large amounts of power, and nuclear energy is seen by the U.S. military as the natural power source for them. As New World Vistas, air and space power for the 21st century, this is an Air Force board report, says, in the next two decades, new technologies will allow the fielding of space-based weapons of devastating effectiveness to be used to deliver energy and mass as force projections in tactical and strategic conflict. These advances will enable lasers with reasonable mass and cost to effect very many kills. But power limitations, says this report, impose restrictions on such space-based weapons, making them relatively unfeasible. A natural technology to enable high power, it goes on, is nuclear power in space. Quote, setting the emotional issues of nuclear power aside, this technology offers a viable alternative for large amounts of power in space. The Outer Space Treaty was and is a visionary document. The U.S., incidentally, was a leader in getting it enacted. It is now signed by most of the nations of the world. It's based on the Antarctic Treaty. It calls for the exploration and use of outer space for the benefit and the interests of all countries and prohibits the placement in orbit around the Earth of any objects carrying nuclear weapons or any kind of weapons of mass destruction. For nearly four decades, it has kept space war-free. What a legacy to be left to our children and their children at the dawn of this new century, this new millennium, if the U.S. succeeds in trashing the Outer Space Treaty and makes space a new place for war. No one will profit but Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, and TRW, and so on. We have a narrow window to keep space for peace, to strengthen the Outer Space Treaty and ban all weapons in space. We must join with people from around the world and stop this move by the United States to turn the heavens into a war zone. I urge you to join with the global network against weapons and nuclear power in space and a move against what is happening. We must challenge the anti-environmental, anti-democratic global economy, and we must challenge its would-be enforcement arm, the new U.S. space military establishment. Thank you.
That was Carl Grossman. Carl Grossman is professor of journalism at the State University of New York. He has specialized in investigative reporting on environmental and energy issues for over 30 years. His books include Cover Up, What You're Not Supposed to Know About Nuclear Power, and The Wrong Stuff, The Space Program's Nuclear Threat to Our Planet. He's a principal in EnviroVideo. That's a New York-based environmental television documentary and news programming company. He wrote and narrated their award-winning documentaries, Nukes in Space, 3 Mile Island Revisited, and The Push to Revive Nuclear Power. He's also the host of their syndicated interview show, Enviro Close-Up. Next week, you will hear from Jacqueline Cabasso and Bruce Gagnon on nuclear weapons in space and space junk. Here's Bruce Gagnon.
Today, we view space as a junkyard. There are 110,000 pieces of space junk orbiting the planet Earth at 18,000 miles an hour, being tracked on the radar screens at NORAD in Cheyenne Mountain. The International Space Station, being built just above the Earth at the price of $100 billion, recently had to be moved to another orbit because they said space junk was going to hit it. Edgar Mitchell, the sixth man to walk on the moon. He said, if we allow the Pentagon to put weapons in space, to even test weapons in space, that we will create so much more space junk that we will not be able to get a rocket off the planet Earth. We will be entombed to this planet.
That's a brief preview for next week. Bruce Gagnon is an anti-nuclear activist who began his work with the United Farm Workers. Join us next week for more on weapons in space and space junk. I hope you have a pen handy for more information. You can find links to the websites of the organizations mentioned today on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. You can get a copy of today's program with Andy Kimbrell and Carl Grossman on military and space technology for $12. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number, 877-TUC-TAPE, translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Mariah Gallardon. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.